me see here. All right, good evening. This is the This is the, I'll call to order the 18th meeting of the Municipal Courts Task Force. I would like to welcome all who are here. Tonight we have, to my left, we have Liz Thomas, we have the Honorable Betty Poole, we have Mark Solomon, and we have the Honorable Glenn Galbraith, and I'm Ray Schlatter, the chair. We also have excused, because of illness, both the District Attorney Gwen Wilkinson, as well as Judge Scott Miller. And we have, we expect Jason Leifer to be here shortly. Are there, we have the agenda that's in front of us. Do we have any changes to the agenda? All right. So the approval of the March 9th minutes, they're on the table. They've been passed out earlier. I have provided to Joe a few corrections that are just typos, nothing significant. But other than that, and if anybody else has typos and they would like to provide them to Joe, he'll include those in the record. But other than that, may we have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Glenn moves. A second?
Second.
Betty? Any further changes, modifications? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
They're approved. Public comment. This is the portion of the meeting where any members of the public are free to address the group and speak for a few minutes about whatever may be of interest and not only to us, but to the individual speaker. Is there any member of the public who wishes to speak? Seeing none, there'll be no public comment this evening. In terms of the chair's report, obviously this is an extremely important meeting because we are going to get into some very substantive discussion. I would note, and obviously there's nothing we can do about it, but I feel very badly that two of our very important members are not here, both Gwen and Scott, because I think they both represent important sectors. That being said, I want to thank Glenn, because I think he has provided us with ongoing commentary, which has been very useful. I appreciate that. And I also want to thank Liz, because she's already taken a stab at writing her section of the report, and I appreciate that. And there's been some correspondence on that. So the bottom line here is that we are now reaching the last chapter of this, run of this particular task force, and it's probably the most critical chapter because it involves us assimilating all that we've learned and trying to put it together in some sensible and manageable and workable set of recommendations that can be passed on to our minders in a way that would be useful. So it is extremely important that we make every effort to be present to the extent that that's at all possible, and we will do our best to pick days from here going into June when it appears that we will have at least the majority of us present. So other than that, I have no other report. Joe?
Just a few things. First, Glenn's memo, the updated next steps. I posted it and I circulated on email, but if there's anyone who didn't bring a hard copy of it, I'll have copies made while we're getting started here, so just let me know if you'd like a paper copy of that, and we'll get it made right away. There's a couple of new pieces of paper on your desks. One is an email that I received from Gwen earlier today, who had promised some time ago to get us the link to the Broome County DA's office that has the kind of the easy V&T process online. So I sent you her note with the link. I copied the first few pages. I'm going to look while you're talking, too, to see if there's a next page on here that I didn't copy that includes the specific results of a plea. So there may be another page that I'll see if it's on there. And you can also just go right to the link if you'd like. The last thing is there's a front and back page of numbers. We pulled these together over the weekend. It's basically the local cost of the local courts. So we looked at a comptroller's report that showed the expenses by court. We also got information from the comptroller about revenues generated by those courts, the differences in the net cost to the municipality. We then compared that to the tax levy of that municipality to see how much of each town or village's tax levy is made up of these costs for the courts. So you can see that on one side of the page. On the other side of the page, something that the task force has talked about before, which is it's a relatively small fraction of the money that goes to the locality. So on one side of this paper, you can see who gets what by jurisdiction, state, county, local, and then the total collections. At the bottom of that page is the percent of total collections that goes to each of those jurisdictions. So hopefully that will fill in some of the blanks with respect to revenues and expenses of the courts. I think, Ray, the last thing I would ask, this is a really important meeting, so as you're offering comments, if you'd use your microphone, because it's really important that we capture that on the tape. And that's it for me.
Very good. Thanks, Joe. This document is extremely helpful. But just, I want to make sure I'm understanding. So on the flip side, where it has the $1.4 million total.
Right.
So that's the total amount of vehicle and traffic revenue that was, is it just vehicle and traffic or it's all crime?
I think it's everything. I think it's all sources.
All sources.
Right.
That were collected by these town and village courts.
That's right.
And then of that amount, $991,000 went to the state, $110,000 to the county, $385,000 to the localities. That's what that's saying, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So why, I'm trying to reconcile, oh, I see. Okay, so if you add the revenue on the flip side for the towns and the villages, it adds up to $379,152?
Of the ones that report, yeah, and the reason it's different than the one on the other side, if you look, Freeville, I didn't include Freeville in the total because while I've got the revenues, I don't have the expenditures of Freeville. So that's the reason that bottom bold line says total reporting. It's everybody but Freeville in that bottom line. So if you add Freeville's $6,300, I think that gets you right to the $385,000 grand total.
That's it. Okay. That makes sense. Fair enough. Good. Got it. All righty. Thank you, Joe. That's very extremely helpful, and it'll make it'll be useful for our discussion. All right, so we are now to the discussion part of the agenda. These four questions are not necessarily the dispositive questions. They're simply to kind of guide the discussion. I think in addition to these four questions, we also have Glenn's missive, which I think has been very helpful. That's a document dated March 29th, 2016. And I think Glenn has a legitimate threshold question, which I'm willing to spend a few minutes on in any event, which is to address the question of the nature and scope of our charge, because I think we've done a lot of exploration in this work over the past 8 months, 9 months, and we have reviewed a lot of data. And the question is, now we must go back to the charge and see what truly we can do within the scope of our task and what we might want to do. And if we want to do something beyond the scope, how we're going to get there. So in a way, I'm saying let's dance around the issue for a second. It'll kind of get us warmed up a little bit, and then we can dive into this. So I'll be glad to start, but if Glenn, if you wish to start, that's fine.
My question is relatively straightforward, and that is whether our committee is expected to come up with a list of actual recommendations, maybe even weighted recommendations, which things we think are the most important that occur or not, or are we simply to identify possible issues that the legislatures might want to consider and identify some pros and cons of each of those, but not actually make any recommendations? And I just think we sort of need to know what it is we're trying to ultimately produce before we try to produce it.
Is it possible that if there are things that we think really rose to the surface consistently again and again and again, and we all think, okay, this is something that really should be changed, we could make recommendations and also suggestions. I mean, we could have recommendations and also just comments or items to consider. So it seems like we could do a little of both.
Well, the one thing that might be useful, what I went back, having read Glenn's memo, I went back to the resolution itself, which is in our white book, and the language that we are charged with basically in relevant part says that we will, quote, review the current structure and operations of the municipal court system for the purpose of identifying potential ways and means to sustain and improve the efficiency of operations and the quality of justice provided by the town and village courts. So what I see are, number one, we review the system. Number two, we identify the potential ways to sustain or improve the operations and the delivery of quality justice. And number three, we lay out the means to get there for anything other than maintaining the status quo. So that's kind of how I was reading it. And then I'm further informed by the analysis that Joe had provided, which was the memorandum that was dated January 25th, 2015, in which he had made recommendations which kind of developed those same sorts of themes and expressly said, look, we are not trying to do this simply to identify high-yield, money-saving ventures for submission in the 2015 government enforcement plan. So we're not doing that. However, we are looking at the structure and trying to come up with alternative models, if necessary, that would be aimed at improving the consistent quality of service without increasing the local costs. So there's a little bit of a nuance, but I think that's kind of... So I'm kind of, and frankly, what brought me to all of this was I was reading Liz's draft, and you had kind of started talking about that as part of our methodology. So it seems to me that it's more than just saying, here are things that could be done, and these are the pros and cons. I think our job is to say, this is what we think ought to be done, and this is how you can get there. Recognizing at the end of the day that there may be a minority view on some of these points.
Right.
Okay.
If I could add one more, there's more, just one other page of guidance here is in the charge itself. So the task force was asked to look at the issues of quality and economy, but then in the deliverable, I think it's pretty clear, task force should conclude its work in a written report to the Tompkins County Council of Governments that sets forth its findings and recommendations. Recommendations of the task force should be specific and include any legal actions required to implement the recommendation. Additionally, each recommendation should be accompanied by an estimate of the related costs and benefits. So it's...
Where's that, anyways?
It's in your charge. There's a separate page that was the charge. I'm reading right from the web page.
Oh, I have that as a draft charge. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Got it. That's even better. So, Glenn, does that answer your idea or your thought about this?
Yeah, I'm glad to have that circuit. Okay.
Because
I wasn't quite sure myself.
So, one thought I had in terms of trying to approach this was... obviously it's always easier to go with the stuff that everybody can agree on and kind of tick that off, and then follow up with some of the more contentious items. Glenn has proposed in part that we discard certain items out of hand, and that's also a way of narrowing our work. But I thought it might be helpful, and perhaps people don't wish to do this now, but I thought it might be helpful, having heard everything, just to go around the room and allow each of us to kind of give a sense of the kinds of things that where each of us would feel comfortable recommending and some of the things that we're not quite as comfortable recommending, to see if there's any consensus out of the box. If that's one way of doing it. Another is that we could just throw different topics on the table and just go from there. So I'm willing to go either way, but it strikes me that we need to start the conversation, and I certainly don't wish to control it. So I'm willing to listen to whatever thoughts others have.
I would just say that Glenn's outline is a really good start, and we could, what Glenn has provided are a number of things that I have on my list as well, and then I have some additional items. So if we started with your recommendations and discussing them piece by piece, would that be agreeable? And then we can add to.
Sure. I mean, that certainly is one way to go. Betty, how do you feel about that?
I would tend to agree with Liz. I like Glenn's outline, and I'd like to just, if you're going to ask my opinion as to what we should and should not pursue, and then at least narrow it down to maybe two or three items, Glenn's outline says it perfectly.
Okay.
So I think, if we use that as a template, more or less, I think we can narrow it down a little bit.
Mark, do you have any thoughts about this?
I like Glenn's outline. I thought it was very helpful. I thought his reiteration of the points over time, found that very useful. And I would suggest the first order of business, once Joe gets it printed so that I can look at it again, would be to ask if people wish to add issues or specific program items to be considered, and then I would do some kind of rough straw poll about each of those items and see where we are. It's too bad we don't have all of the members present for that purpose, and probably they should also be consulted before we get too rigorous about the ranking. But yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Sure. All right, then why don't I think that makes sense. I think I would only preface this by pointing out that there will always be, with respect to some of these suggested changes, and I'm talking about operational changes, there will always be some understandably valid pushback on the parts of some of the courts. So, for instance, it is perfectly fine for us to say that it makes sense that there be that people be released in their own recognizance, or that the bail not exceed the OAR guidelines for available funds, because it does make sense in so many ways. But at the end of the day, there's nothing that this group can do to enforce that on the town courts and the village courts. And on and on, we could do that with many of these operational things. the stuff that we can deal with in a more structured sort of way is really not so much the operational, some of the operational, of course, but the stuff that we can actually make recommendations that have bearing and could be implemented, it may require legislative changes, certainly organizational changes, are things like creating a DWI part, you know, for all, for the entire county, or creating, frankly, a misdemeanor part for the entire county. In other words, taking all misdemeanors and DWIs, taking it all out of the town courts. We can actually make recommendations and try to show a pathway for that. That's a different kind of a discussion. And so I just want to make sure that we all are bear that in mind as we go through this conversation, because I don't want us to...
What is the distinction that you're...
Well, what I'm saying is, for instance, there's a huge amount of town court discretion within the existing structure that no there's short of a constitutional amendment, we can't change. However, there are ways, if we wanted to, for instance, create a central arraignment, or if we wanted to create a DWI part in the county court, there are ways structurally to make that happen short of the district court model. And that's what Scott has been researching. And it appears, I asked him if he had anything that we could share with the committee. And he sent me an email earlier this afternoon saying that he was not able to come because of the flu. And I asked if there was anything he could share. And he said that in terms of a DWI part, that could be done by creating a county court judge can preside over all DWIs. He said the where it gets to be somewhat of a wrinkle has to do with DWAIs and whether there is jurisdiction or whether a county court judge does have jurisdiction, because that's a vehicle and traffic law, a vehicle and traffic offense. So, but he's working on that, and that's something that so what I'm saying, Mark, is that may be something that could be done regardless of whether the village and town courts wished it to happen. It could be enforced from the outside, but some of this other stuff could not.
So you're distinguishing between things that would require fundamental legal alteration, whether or not opposed by the existing status quo, and things that could be done short of that kind of wholesale, difficult legislative enactment. Is that right?
I am. But what is ironic is, having heard from Judge Chernish and some of the folks from the Magistrates Association, that it sounds like it will be easier to get the cooperation of the town justices in modifying some of these discretionary operational things than it would be to impose some of these other issues. So it's one of these great ironies that involves both a political component and a legal component, but I'm willing to dance on that, the head of that pin, at some point, perhaps. But right now, I'd just soon have a good substantive discussion. Yes, Liz.
It seems like there will be people agreeing and disagreeing with almost anything we put forward. So, if we who have listened to people through all these meetings can come to an agreement on some recommendations, whether there's whatever it takes to change them. I mean, if it's something that takes change at the state level, then let's send it up to the state. I hear over and over that Tompkins County works as a county more effectively than many other counties. And so the state does sort of rely on us and look at recommendations that come from Tompkins County with a special eye, knowing that we work together. So if it's a recommendation that requires, a constitutional change, I know that's almost impossible, but hey, you know, they're considering opening up that process, so maybe now is it's timely to put in a recommendation on that. So I don't know, it seems like if there are strong sentiments of everyone that bubbled to the top, I don't think we should be afraid to put that on paper, whether we can impose it or not. There will be further discussion within the courts and within local governments and within maybe communities in you know, the localities. I think we should just be straightforward.
Right. Fair enough. So, does anybody else have comment prefatory? Otherwise, we'll go to Glenn's memo and just go down the list. Jason, welcome.
Ray, I would ask that we start with, if it's acceptable, start with the issues Glenn wants to drop and see if anybody wants any of those to be moved up above the line. That begins on page 6.
Sure. I'm quite willing to do that. Any objection to that?
I have, it's not an objection by any means, but being a sitting town justice in a town where there is one town justice, and where the caseload is not as significant as it is in other small rural towns, cutting back to one town justice, I know that's not going to save a whole lot of money, but I think at least you would have some consistency in the results of the cases.
In light of that comment, I suggest we move that back up above the line.
Right. In other words, I think what Mark is suggesting is that to the extent that there is any pushback on any of these points, unless there's clear consensus that the point ought to be dropped, then it ought to go above the line. And I think even Glenn would agree with that.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
All right, fair enough. So we've already started. So remove one of the two justices, that goes above the line. We're in agreement on that. How about closing all the village courts and letting the respective towns absorb the load? My view of that is that I agree that should come off. That should be dropped. I think either we go with a comprehensive plan or we don't. But I think, you know, requiring villages, if they want to have a village court, they can have a village court. I mean, I'm reminded of the Nassau and Suffolk experiment, which I find pretty remarkable, especially in. In both places, but even in Nassau, where it was supposedly a great program, and the fact that they retained, you know, what is it, 59 of the 62 village courts, even though they have a district court. So how can we argue with that? But I would suggest that we take that off the table, and I would let it drop. But is there anybody who objects to that?
I agree that it should be dropped. I mean, really, it's the fiscal responsibility of the municipality. I mean, if the village feels like they can't afford it, then they have rights already to drop it. So,
right. Mark, Jason, anybody? Okay. So seems that the consensus is there. We will drop that one. How about go down to the third, create a district court to cover all misdemeanors and above and limit the town and village courts to local infractions and small claims?
I think we should keep that, actually.
Yeah. And actually, I think we should, too. I, for discussion purposes, and whether it's a district court or whether it's a county court part that takes on a greater load, I don't know. It might even just be a DWI part, but I think the discussion, that needs to be discussed.
You'll note that the DWI part, Glenn has provided for above the line.
I do note that, but I also note in my own thought, if we're going to do a DWI part, I think the real discussion is, do we do a DWI part and a broader part? In other words, do we do a broader part or do we limit it to a DWI part? That's a discussion I would very much like to have. And I've got to tell you that I was not impressed with the Nassau and the Suffolk District Court models. They struck me as being remarkably cumbersome, costly, and frankly, posing some very difficult problems for people who were arrested and the rights of individuals. I was stunned about some of the lack of concern for immediacy in processing individuals charged with relatively minor offenses.
And we have no other model.
We have no other motto.
Are we looking at, Glenn, the March 29th letter?
We are, Jason. I'm sorry. We're looking at Glenn's March 29, 2016. And what we've decided to do is to get the discussion going. We are now simply trying to not just go through this list, but also add to it or tweak it as identifying the areas that we wish to discuss.
This line we're talking about is another thing we're going to create, bringing an issue above or below.
Excuse me?
This line, you're talking about bringing certain things on here above the line.
Yeah, if you go down to page 6 where it says issues we probably should drop. So we're saying, no, we're not going to remove one of the two justices. In other words, we do want to discuss that. And no, we are not going to drop the district court. But we are going to drop the close all village courts and let their respective towns absorb the load. That's okay.
Sorry, I'm dealing with setting up an election in Dryden for a referendum. So it's over the Board of Elections until about 15 minutes ago.
No, we're just grateful you're here. Don't worry. Thank you. All right, how about the request?
Just on the record, I object to moving it above the line.
Okay.
Just.
All right. And that's noted. The next one, require all town and village justices to be attorneys. Are we going to drop it, or are we going to try to discuss that?
I think we should drop it.
Put it under the line.
Glenn put it under the line for a reason. Mark.
I think it's aspirational kind of assertion. I think if it has merit, it ought properly be addressed in the context of elections when people choose their judges and their justices. And so I say we drop it as a structural matter, as a matter to be suggested to our, what do you call them, our watchers, our...
Our minders.
Our minders.
Right. Liz, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm conflicted because it seems like we heard both recommendations. So I'm conflicted, but I'll go with the crowd.
Well, here's the thing about this.
Trump gets elected if you do that.
I'm going to go out on a limb on this, and I'm not at all forecasting where I'm going to end up on this, because frankly, I don't know where I'm going to end up on this. But I think what Liz said is absolutely true, and that is, if you may remember, going all the way back to the beginning and all of the discussion about this, there were some very, very eloquent, articulate comments that were provided to this group about that particular problem. And I think that we, you know, at least should be discussing this in one way or another. And what I mean is, I think it's already become clear to us, or at least to many of us, that one of the reasons a DWI part is increasingly attractive to a number of people, at least what has been said informally, is because of the complexity and the burden and the time issues that are expected, and the need for consistency and other factors that pertain to what is a very common offense and affects a lot of citizens and in ways that the rest of the penal code does not necessarily affect other citizens. And I think that, and it's not even the penal code, it's the vehicle and traffic, but my point here is I think we'd be making a mistake to, at this preliminary stage, to just say, that's off the table. I think we need to discuss that.
What if in our report we have findings? And so this could be part, we may not have a recommendation, or we may not be able to come to an agreement among all of us on exactly how we feel about this. But if it's part of the findings and we say, you know, there were there was testimony strongly in both ways. There's some justification in both ways. And this is a finding, but not a recommendation. Or maybe it will be a recommendation. But I think it's worth discussing, as you say.
I concur with Ray on this. So,
I think using our original litmus, which was if there's any, unless there's consensus by all that it be dropped, it's not dropped. So that goes above the line. The centralized lockup, where defendants arrested after court hours could be held at least overnight or longer, I agree that that should be dropped. I think a centralized arraignment makes sense, but a centralized lockup is like, where's that coming from other than Long Island? Yeah, I know. Obviously, if there is a centralized arraignment part, there may be a place where there has to be a holding cell, but that's a little bit different than I think what Glenn is referring to here.
The lockup sounds more like what they do in New York City.
Well, that's exactly it. I think we were all rather stunned. As we were talking to the folks from Nassau County, because they were talking about how it is the exception, not only the exception, it's the rare exception where somebody arrested for a misdemeanor, including a DWI, is released on bail. In other words, if they could be given an appearance ticket, but they said that's even rare. They're typically just arrested, they're held, and then they're released on bail the next morning. So you get a DWI in Nassau County, you better plan on taking your toothbrush. So
change the way you drive down that break?
Well, I take the fifth. There you go. But, you know, it really surprised us, because what struck us in contrast was the huge effort on the part of all town justices in this county to get out at 2 o'clock in the morning and do the arraignments and get people out on bail, and it doesn't matter whether they're lawyers or lay people, they're really committed to that. And that was very impressive, you know, to hear that kind of testimony from a lot of good folks. So, all right. So I think, do we all agree we're going to take that one off the table or not?
Is there any? Fine with me. Yeah.
Betty?
Yes, that's fine.
All right, it's off the table.
And again, I'd like to note, just for the record, that I object to moving the issue regarding requiring town and village justices to be attorneys, just to make it a matter of record.
That's fair, and that is truly noted. And please, I mean, we can discuss it, but it's always very hard because we have three qualified judges that sitting on this panel, and we all have been raised in the tradition of some extremely capable town justices, and many have come here and have addressed this panel. So part of this is very difficult to have this conversation, but it's also, I think, necessary because we're trying to look at a larger issue. So, all right, so let's go back then to issues worth considering. This might be easier. And let's start from the top. The first question had to do with the recommendation is all courts should agree to take partial payments of fines and surcharges and restitution. And again, how we make this work would be another matter, but let's first talk about whether we want that to be part of our recommendation.
Yes.
Yes.
I just have a statement. I mean, the town courts have that option now.
They do, and so the question, that is going to be the more complicated part of this. For many of these kinds of recommendations, this one, the question of use of confessions of judgment, the question of bail, these are pieces that right now are left to the discretion of the justices. And the question is, how can we put some teeth behind those particular recommendations, if at all? I mean, is there a way that we can make this more mandatory? And it might be to appeal to some sort of statewide legislation. But in the meantime, I think we are, I don't think there's anybody on this committee that or this task force that argues the other way. Am I correct on that? Jason? Partial payments, fines, surcharges, restitution? That's okay? All right.
Could I just make a comment on that?
Yes, please.
Heard from the clerks and speaking to our own clerk, I just want to be mindful of all of these things that do take, it does say it's more paperwork for the court clerk, but as we have like double pluses on some of the things, we might want to think about double minuses on some of these things. And I do think the court clerks are very busy. It's hard for them to keep up with all this. So that might, I don't know if that's one of the reasons why some courts don't take partial payments is because it takes longer and they're already behind. But that might be something to acknowledge in the recommendations.
And that's a fair point. I think another way of looking at it as well is, though, that if you have this kind of a path plus the use of confessions of judgment, then you will be saving ultimately on the clerk's times in terms of chasing people to get the money. Now, that might also reduce the bottom line, but my suspicion is that the bottom line, and this purely is anecdotal because we have no way of knowing empirically, but my sense is that the bottom line is most people pay their obligations if they are able, and pay them when they are able. And it is only some people, and I think it's probably a remarkably small percentage, that truly simply thumb their nose at the court and say, no, we're not going to do it, and they just walk away. But I could be mistaken about that. But I haven't heard from any of the testimony from any of the judges and anybody else that there are that many folks who act in a way that is willful in the non-payment of their fines and in the and this responsibility. And we also must bear in mind that the town justices do, with respect to vehicle traffic, retain scofflaw, the ability to enforce using scofflaw, which is a very simple way to have a dramatic effect on a person's life without putting them in jail.
Just from our experience, I mean, we have a relatively new court clerk. She's been there for 2 or 3 years, but there were boxes and boxes of old cases that just hadn't been finished where people hadn't paid their fines. So I think that there are, you know, there are plenty of people out there that don't pay their fines.
Go ahead, Mark.
I just want to re-emphasize what you said, Ray. This is not, this and the following suggestions running through certainly the end of the second page into the third page, maybe beyond, these are not efficiency issues. They have efficiency implications, and those should be considered. But these are justice issues. These are fundamental justice issues. And if you are paying attention to the news from outside Tompkins County, you know that we are running a system of debtors' prisons in this country, increasingly. And we don't want to do that here. And so if there is an ancillary cost that is difficult for the court clerks, two things, I'm sorry, and let's address that.
Right.
But that doesn't cut against the significance of this and 7 or 8 other of these items that appear on Glenn's list.
If I can just respond that maybe one of the recommendations is to ensure that municipalities have adequate hours of court clerks to enforce.
But let's draw it marginally, right. just to make it crystal clear. Mm-hmm. What do we prefer, an overworked court clerk or someone who is now without the capacity to drive to work and maybe goes to jail because he was $15 short on a $250 fine?
Agreed.
Makes no sense.
Agreed.
But I don't think that's the case, Joe, with all due respect.
It is the case sometimes, some places. I'm not suggesting...
On a vehicle and traffic ticket, I don't know of a judge that would issue a warrant, a bench warrant.
For failure to pay a fine?
For the failure to pay a fine on a vehicle and traffic ticket. I have never in my 23 years have known a judge that has done that. We have, Mr. Schlatter has indicated, the ability to scoff law them. And I'll tell you what, if anything gets their attention, that does.
May I suggest that
Glenn.
We're actually discussing these in great detail now?
Which is perfectly fine.
Rather than just sort of identifying whether we want to... I thought we were going to go through the list and just identify which things we still want to keep on the agenda for further discussion.
Well, I don't think, I appreciate that, but it's okay if we discuss it, because bottom line is, for instance, I'm not sure we need to say a whole lot more about the first one. I think taking partial payment of fines, surcharges, restitution is if we're all in agreement on it, then let's just include that in our recommendation. We didn't need to figure out how to do it, but... So I'm willing to broaden the discussion as opposed to picking at it.
I agree, because it's helpful for me to hear other people's comments on each of the topics. So we may change our minds as part of the discussion to decide.
The other thing that, and we will get to this, but I intend to add to Glenn's list the following additional operational related kinds of issues. One is the question of access to the courts. The one is the use of electronic records, which I think relates to this particular issue particularly. Another is the whole notion of scheduling cooperation. And then I'm getting into more broad issues, but what I call third-party policies, and specifically the policies of the district attorney with respect to plea bargaining and resolution, the policies of the police with respect to identifying cases for prosecution versus some other alternative diversion that we have discussed, whether it's youth court or mental health court or some other mechanism, and the whole question about training and how that fits in terms of our justices as well as attorneys, clerks, and those who involve the court. So I think there are other issues here. Glenn's list is a great list, but I think there's still other things that we're going to need to add to that. So,
What was your third one, Ray? I had access to courts, electronic...
Scheduling cooperation.
Thank you.
Among the courts. And I think Glenn had centralized arraignments already, I believe.
But third-party policies...
Third-party policies, and I'm referring to the policies of the DA as it pertains to plea bargaining, and I'm just loosely throwing out the Broome County motto or the Seneca County motto. The policies of the police with respect to doing, pre-charge diversion and the exercise of their discretion, and the third one had to do with training. Of court personnel, judges, frankly, prosecutors, defense attorneys, clerks. In other words, if we're going to make this work, especially with all these electronic records and access and what have you, we had some very interesting comments from the fellow from out in Danby or Newfield, who's setting up the computer systems out there, and Judge Chernish was talking about that. And there's some really fascinating stuff. Maureen Reynolds was talking about all the stuff that's available. But that's not going to help anybody unless people know how to use it. And it's not just the clerks. It needs to be the people who are using the courts on a regular basis. So all of that, I think, is important to this process. So anyways, that being said, the electronic records, the access, all of that, I think, dovetails with this partial payment of fines and surcharges, because if it's all electronically set up, then the clerk's time is much less, because they can spit out reminders if they wish or do whatever needs to be done. They can even spit out scofflawing, is my guess, if things aren't, payments aren't made after a certain period of time. So, I don't know. How about the next one? All courts should provide liberal periods of time for low-income defendants to pay fines, surcharges, and restitution. I think...
I agree.
Yes.
Yes.
Everybody? Yes? Yes. Okay. So again, that, you know, really...
That leaves the how-to question, which is very difficult, but...
Right. Right. But that dovetails in with the first one as well.
Yes,
you take part payments, et cetera.
Can I just ask, where does court accessibility come in here? Because we did hear from several people about just physically being able to get access to the courts is a problem. Is that a separate... It sort of dovetails into a number of these different things, so right. Should that be a separate item or...
Yes.
First edition.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And let me, just to give you a little bit of a taste of what I'm thinking, it seems to me that the more the courts are posted online, you know, and the less, not that I want them to be less present physically, but... If people can go online and file papers and send emails and make appearances and pay fines and plead guilty and what have you, if all that can be done online, they can do it at 2 o'clock in the morning if they want. And that means the court is accessible. You don't have to only be there at 4 o'clock on a Monday afternoon until 7 o'clock on a Monday evening. And this is the kind of stuff that I think we need. You know, there's that kind of access, as well as the physical access that we're talking about.
Are we, in some of the lower income areas, there's not internet access? But I don't know, there are just those things. And the ability to be familiar with computers is maybe, I don't know, challenging for some people. But anyway, right, yeah.
That's always going to be an issue, but, you know, eventually everybody got a television, so I think it's, you know...
Not me.
Okay.
But is there any reason why... Because I think we've had this problem in Dryden since they started closing the court at noon on Fridays. Some people come in afternoon, like, say, 1 o'clock to pay a fine, and for some reason the town clerk says that they can't accept even the envelope. Is there any reason why a town clerk can't accept the payment of some, like, or at least take the envelope for somebody for a fine that's being paid to the court?
Glenn?
I think that would be one of these access issues that we're talking about.
There may be an issue related to separation of powers. In fact, at one time, the village police used to, because our court is very part-time, and people would come in to pay a traffic ticket fine, and they would leave it with the police department. And I ended up looking into that, and then there was really a question of whether the police, or for that matter, the executive branch, should be doing part of the court's job, and the potential that would cause of someone believing that the police or the executive branch was acting for the court when in fact they really shouldn't. We now have a drop box, literally a locked drop box. So if somebody wants to pay the fine when the clerk's not there, they can literally put it in that box. Next time the clerk is in, she unlocks the box and takes it out.
We have a drop box in the room too.
I think there might be an issue there. I'm not positive, though. But it was enough that we stopped having the police clerk do that.
Okay. So to circle back then, we're all in agreement, liberal opportunities to pay fines and encourage that. The next one is the confession of judgment. And again, I think... Betty has indicated that the town courts already have, the local justices already have the discretion to do this. This is one that I think is directly related to what Mark was saying a few minutes ago, and that it is remarkably not used as often as one would think it should be used. And it's especially, I think, useful not only for people who cannot afford to pay, but also for people who, for whatever reason, choose not to pay because it stalks them. And if they end up owning property or trying to sell property or trying to get a mortgage or a loan, this is going to affect them. So sometimes when you get people who have the means to pay but don't for whatever reason, this becomes an inconvenience at the least and perhaps something more so later without putting them in jail, without incurring the cost to the county of housing them, and certainly without running the risk of the stigma of being a debtor's prison, the stigma and the unfairness of it. So, does anybody have a counterargument to that or wish to advance it? All right. Obviously, if people, upon further reflection, have some other thoughts, you know, the discussion isn't concluded until we finally sign the final document. So feel free to, but at least, you know, we're getting some of this stuff off the table. What about the bail issue? And that's the next two points are the question of bail. Basically, an ROR policy as a presumption, but in those cases where bail is absolutely necessary, either because it's mandatory or for other reasons, that it be fixed at a level that is that can be made by the client with the assistance of the, by the defendant with the assistance of the OAR. What are the thoughts about that? Mark?
We should recommend the wisdom of that. We should recommend the utility of that, the efficiency of that. We should recommend the justice of that. The nuts and bolts of making it happen strike me as, in part, an educational problem, in part, a political problem. I think it would be very difficult to enforce, but I'm not worried about that. I think it should be made clear that this is a very good, these are very good ideas.
Other thoughts on that? Liz?
I know the least about this, but this seems like, again, I mean, in our report, I keep trying to think about how our report will look, but maybe it's best practices. Would this be one of the best practices that we would recommend? I'm trying to think of the sections of our report that we might have, and
it is best practices. But it is something else. To go back to where Ray started this discussion, these are not unimportant matters. These are matters that go to the heart of the nature of our criminal justice system.
Right.
I would suggest that all of these are probably enforceable via litigation, but that's a discussion for another day.
There is, though, Liz, to answer that. It is quite, and this actually follows up your earlier comment, it is quite conceivable that with good support, and I'm talking about the data support that we have, and that we perhaps should still develop, with good support, we might be able to convince the legislature to, in fact, require that there be that everybody be released in their own recognizance, except, and then you put in some exceptions that would allow for the extreme case, either in the mandatory or when it is very clear. In other words, you'd have to enumerate the reasons. Our laws are full of those kinds of mandates that judges, and I have no doubt whether they're lawyer-trained judges or not lawyer-trained judges, I think most judges try to follow the law, and I have no doubt that if it's made clear that's what the law is, most people will just ROR them. And in fact, what will happen as a practical matter is that the police will end up just giving appearance tickets if they know they're going to be ROR'd anyways. That's, I suspect, but it can be a best practice, but it could be a best practice coupled with a recommendation that state legislation be enacted. I would But apropos the question of empirical supporting data, it'd be interesting to know, and Joe, maybe, I don't know if we have this or we can get this. Is there any way for us to determine in our county over a given period of time how many people truly have absconded? You know, how many people have failed to appear and have forfeited the bail? Do you have a sense of that, Glenn?
Well, I can. I don't know of any data, but I can, anecdotally, I can say in the last 25 years, I've probably had five or six defendants who I ROR'd who really split. I mean, they left and did not come back. Now, I've had a lot of defendants who did not show up for the next court appearance or something like that. But I mean, out and out ran, half dozen, if that. I can actually remember almost every one of them. It doesn't happen that often. And it just seems to me we still have a lot of people up there in the jail who are pretrial detainees. And it's hard for me to believe that they all really should be there. That being said, there are clearly times when some people need to be put in jail pretrial detention because they've made it very clear they're going to run, they have a history of running, and you've got to set bail on them. But it's got to be a reasonable bail, just enough to make them not run, but not so high that they can't possibly make it.
That suggests a slightly different organization of these very numerous matters. Perhaps pretrial detention is the header, and devices, given the costs of pretrial detention, and then these are devices to reduce the numbers of people. The goal ought to be that the bare minimum number of people are in jail who have to be in jail, period, full stop.
No, I think that's the ultimate effect of this. And I think another factor is that in our increasingly technologically scrutinized world,
there's no privacy.
You can't run. I mean, you can hide for a little bit, but you're going to be found out. Everybody is.
You can only hide if people are not really interested in finding you.
Or even if they find you, they're not interested in going to collect you.
In collecting you.
No, I have had situations like that where they wouldn't even go to Jamestown, New York to pick the guy up. It was just too much trouble. But that's
pretty amazing. That's just not that far.
Yeah, no, it's not.
All right. Is there anybody who? I mean, we can discuss this piece further. But does anybody wish to add to the discussion at this point? Because I think there's going to be a very interesting question: is how on all of these is going to be an interesting question. But I think the whether if this is the will of the committee, then I think we need to, or the task force, we need to be clear about that.
I think it's worth further discussion.
Okay. And that would include the second one, which is if bail is going to be set it at a level that OAR can assist the individual to get out. All right. Let's go to the next one, which is, this is the device, the transfer device, which is already available. This has to do with, under the CPL, if there's a misdemeanor case, it can be transferred in one of two ways. One is it can be transferred to within the county from a local court to another local court that is presided over by a lawyer judge, or it can be transferred from the town court, the local court, to the county court and be prosecuted by indictment. And the provisions there are in the CPL 170.15 and 25. This is tricky because it also dovetails in with the DWI part issue. It dovetails in with the misdemeanor part issue. I mean, this is a broad discussion, and it's going to take some time, and I'm not sure. I mean, we can certainly start the discussion now, but Let's get it out on the table. I mean, we're together. There are six of us. What do people? Let's broaden the discussion. What do people feel? How do people feel about this kind of an issue? Having cases prosecuted, or at least having the ability to prosecute cases in a different forum other than the town courts.
Well, if I can speak, obviously it's available. I would assume and hope that most defense attorneys and are aware of this availability. And it's up to them to make the decision on whether or not to use it. It's already there.
Other views or other thoughts?
It's not only already there, but it's almost never used.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think our mentioning it, I think, is worthwhile putting in there because, again, it shows that there is that possibility and that non-lawyer judges shouldn't be afraid of it because, one, it just doesn't happen very often anyway. And I think the only reason I even listed it was because if I was a non-lawyer judge, I'd be perfectly happy to see the case go someplace else. If that results in there being an appearance to the public, the defendant, everybody else involved, that, look, we're bending over backwards to give you a fair shake here. And if you feel you need an attorney judge, well, it's available to you. Mm-hmm. Take it away. I've got other things I can do.
Well, and as I say, you know, most, 90%, 95% of the defense attorneys, I hope, would at least know that that is available to them and to their client. So I just don't see any need of even having it on here other than the fact of awareness.
Other thoughts, Jason? Go ahead.
I mean, it is.
Could you pull the microphone too?
Because there, it should be in there for the awareness part of this. I don't know that every defense attorney is aware of it, actually. But the reason those who are, I wouldn't say it's not being used because they always feel that the case remaining in the local court is fine. I think that there are, you know, I think there's considerations about, and they know they have to appear in certain courts over and over and over. If someone's constantly filing these motions, will that affect other clients? I think that's probably a concern that, I mean, I know it's a concern some people have raised to me privately, why it doesn't happen. There's also, again, there's a limited amount of places where these cases could go anyhow. So,
But
the awareness is important. I think the public needs to be aware of this, too, because
yes. If
anything, and you might find more motions like this being filed, if the public knew that their attorney could make this motion, the clients themselves may say to their attorney, I want you to try to move this to another forum. And, you know, I'm surprised that, more knowledgeable clients aren't asking that. Certainly there are some who just wouldn't know of this option at all, but, from our side of it, if our clients were made aware of that at the outset, at least by the attorneys, it's something that might happen more often.
So. Go ahead, Betty.
Well, just to follow up with Jason, and I strongly agree that defendants and the public in general should be made aware of this. With regard to the attorneys, that's not our issue here. If that's an attorney problem where they're worried if they're going to get any repercussions from the judge, they're there to do a job for their client. If they know that is available, then have them bring that to their client's attention. if it's an issue within the attorney community, maybe the attorneys ought to get together and discuss it.
Other thoughts? I'm going to make a suggestion, because I think what I would like to do, and I'm hoping at the next meeting we will have an even fuller complement of our members. But I think that what we should do is, because we can still get through, there are about six more items here on this list, and we could probably get through them, at least in a preliminary sort of way, before the end of the evening. We've got about 15 minutes left. I'm going to suggest that at our next meeting, which is tentatively scheduled for April 13th, and I'm hoping people can all be here, I'm going to suggest that we devote the entire meeting to the question of what I'll call the dramatic changes, any dramatic changes, the whole issue of, district court, DWI part, misdemeanor part, these removal, that this could be part of that discussion. In other words, we would just truly sit down and thrash it out and figure out where we are in terms of what our recommendation would be on those big issues. And hopefully the rest of the stuff we can, where I suspect there's going to be some level of divisiveness, all respectful, of course, but I suspect that there will be some division of opinion, and I think it would be useful to get everybody's viewpoints and see where we land after one very comprehensive discussion.
Perhaps in the interest of time, it would be useful to go back to the first question. With respect to each of the remaining items, does anybody want to move them below the line?
And that's, I think, I agree with that, if we can kind of go through this, though. So let's with that being said, why don't we quickly go through these? The next one is the question of written decisions. That one is probably of all of the recommendations that probably encroaches more on the authority of a judge. If I were a judge, I would be really, really unhappy with that kind of a decision.
And yet, you want it above the line.
It's above the line at this point.
I think it should be removed. We now have recorders. We can get transcripts.
Glenn, why don't you defend this for a minute?
Frankly, I don't think it happens that often. That I have to write a written decision. But I can tell, usually, which cases need a written decision. Because I know it's an issue that is a crux issue in the case, and there's some controversy about it. There is a potential for an appeal. And frankly, I found frequently that forcing myself to write a decision causes me, not necessarily to change the result of that decision, although occasionally even that happens, but it forces me to carefully analyze what I'm doing and making sure what I'm doing is the result of an analysis of the law, not just my personal emotional reaction to a situation, my preconceived notion of what, quote, is fair or not. I agree. I think of all the things that I listed is probably the one that, if we put it into a report, probably it's not going to make any difference. I think it's an important one. I think appellate courts would think it's much more important than those of us who are in trial courts think it is, because it drives them nuts when they get a one-page decision that's a form with some boxes checked, and they have to review whether that decision was appropriate or not. I'm not going to lose sleep one way or the other, whether it gets dropped below the line or not. But it seems to me we're putting a lot of things above the line so far, yeah. And I put them above the line, that are really could easily be called best practices. Right. I think they're worth mentioning as best practices because we all need to be reminded periodically about what we should be doing or what works best. But if it got dropped, I'm...
No, but actually, I would defer to that. I think to, at some level, we're going to be putting in some aspiration or best practice kind of encouragement, and I think this would be one item. Because Judge Raleigh, I recall, addressed this specifically in his testimony. All right, so we'll leave it at least for that purpose. The next item, static policies with respect to sentencing. That's... Why don't we just leave it there for the time being, but that is an issue. Again, that's one of those encroaching on the court's discretion in ways that are probably more so, but fines are there because the court is allowed to charge anywhere from zero to that number, and to say the court should not charge that number is a little difficult.
I think it's different, Ray, though, when you say policy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no, I agree. Again, that's policies are, I agree with you. I agree that there should not be a policy.
Exactly.
So we want to just leave it in for the time being, again, kind of a best practice kind of thing? Or not. We may wish to speak about it more so, but leave it in there for now. The centralized DWI, we're going to deal with that down the road at the April meeting. How about, let's go to centralized arraignment, because I think that's a little bit different. We definitely want to talk about this, I think. I don't think there's any... actually, let's just... Can we agree that we need to talk about that, the centralized arraignment?
Yes.
Okay. And the next one is, I think we ought to at least discuss that. This is the whole point of consolidation of courts on a voluntary basis, you know, adjacent municipalities. It's a very interesting, it's a complex process, but it does minimize or at least renders more efficient some of these outerlying towns, especially in terms of courts. How about the youth court? Do we want to keep that in? I'd like to keep that in as a... Mark's smiling. I'd like to keep it in.
Yes, but you know why.
Yeah, I know why.
Okay.
But I'd like to keep it in because I still think there's a utility, and that dovetails in with my third-party practice issue, third-party policies, where decisions are made to keep young people out of the criminal justice system completely. And the mental health courts. Curious, what's the reaction to that? Betty?
I'm very adamant about mental health issues. As opposed to mental health courts, I think we should, or the legislature should concentrate on mental health facilities available. So I'm not so sure that it should come into our realm of making a decision on that. I think facilities are more important at this particular point in time than a court itself. Once the facilities are made available, there may not be any need for a mental health court. Just my opinion. I have very strong feelings about this. And our facilities are abysmal here. We just don't have enough to help these people. And I don't think this is the forum to be addressing it.
Are there other thoughts on that? Or?
Well, I think this is one that also goes into your third-party policies, because I think if we had more understanding on the prosecution side of this issue in particular, many of the cases we see would be resolved differently. I mean, the thing about that is, if there's no change on that side, you may need to have a mental health court to force, or at least to force through a better resolution. I think that's the problem here is there's procedures in the law already. If you're dealing with two different things, one where someone is unable to assist in their own defense, and then there's the not responsible by reason of mental disease or disease or defect. There's already a procedure for that, but it's pretty cumbersome. I don't think a lot of people use it, and many of the low-level crimes we see, I don't know that you'd want to go down that route necessarily. When we're a lot of times dealing with people who are repeat offenders, who we know, because we talk about this at CJATI a lot, we know certain people are already have certain conditions, and it's more about managing them and whether these are impulsive acts that when they're in treatment they don't the things that what's a crime is not committed. And I mean, to me, at some level, if you've already acknowledged someone has a mental health condition that's driving a certain behavior, or have we already acknowledged that there is limited responsibility on their part? Because if they're being managed effectively, they're not engaging in these behaviors. So, again, that to me, if the DA's office, who hasn't, files on all these folks,
were to
address the, from that end, again, we may not need a mental health court, but
I think there's also, just so we can be clear, because it was a very fascinating presentation by Carol Booth and Susan Crowell at the last meeting, because they made, I thought they highlighted two areas at least. One area had to do with the treatment of individuals with mental health issues in the existing system, and pointing out that, for instance, up at our own jail, we have, I think, a psychiatric social worker who comes in, I think, for 6 hours a week, period. Whereas in places like Cortland County, they have somebody on staff who's doing that. And it struck me as, my God, we're supposedly, ahead of the curve in so many areas, but certainly not that one. So that struck me, just how we treat people. And Jason, the point you made, yes, we do have, the whole issue of competency and determination of competency and, not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect, but that is a bar that is so high up,
right.
and frankly is only even approached or attempted to be approached in the most serious of cases. You don't see it for people who are charged with shoplifting or assault,
right.
or
you
those
don't,
kinds
the,
of...
The thing is these... The argument, exists in those cases too, because if you're trying to say that this condition drives the behavior, but you're not going to use that extreme procedure. So,
right.
That to me, that's where, in the near term, if you have understanding on the, the third party DA's office and how to approach these cases, you can deal with some of the problems we're seeing in this area now. But
all right. So for purposes of Go ahead, Mark.
And the police.
And the police. So I think for purposes of this discussion, we'll leave it on the agenda, but I think it's how we address it and whether we can address it in any significant way, I think, is still up in the air.
Can I just make a comment that
yes.
this might be one of those things that we send as a message to the state, just saying, the funding is inadequate for mental health facilities, and there really needs to be more state money coming for that.
I think so, and I know when we had the discussion with Ms. Crowell and Ms. Booth, Glenn had brought up the possibility, and I think you mentioned it here, of incorporating it somehow into the drug court, because a lot of the issues overlap, and I know that there is pushback, and a lot depends on the person who is the judge in charge as to whether they can accommodate that kind of consolidated effort. But okay, so that's a discussion we'll have further. All right, I think that brings us to the end of this list. Can we agree the four issues that I suggested would also be added to the list? The question of access, electronic records, scheduling cooperation, and third-party policies. Is there any objection to any of those? And then, okay.
training issue, or is that part of...
That's part of the third-party policies, because it's something that the third people, other people would do. What about others? Does anybody have any other items, just general topic areas that they would like to include in these discussions that we haven't addressed?
I thought, Liz, you said you might have some.
I did, but I had the same ones, I think.
Okay.
Although I don't have yours in writing, and mine are in different order, so I can't check them off as
you're going. Oh, all right. Fair enough.
Next time around. I'll make sure that they're all checked off in the end.
Okay. Fair enough.
I mean, the only other one I had was the, I mean, we discussed it at one of the meetings about having the state allow municipalities to keep more of the funds brought in by the courts local to at least recoup all the costs.
The funding, the splitting of fees and revenues, yes.
Right now, as we found out, rough percentage, the state's keeping about 75% of the funds that are brought in. I think locally it was like $1.4 million brought in, and then it locally kept about...
There was a handout tonight, which you'll find very, very useful. It's, Joe compiled. It shows that that in the aggregate, we spend over $1 million. It's $1,040,000 to run all of our local and village courts, not including the city court. So $1,040,000, and the revenue generated by those same courts is just shy of $1.5 million. But the amount that we recover out of that $1.5 million in the aggregate is only $385,000, I believe. Well, the county gets some too, so it's $495,000 total. So basically, a full 50% of our costs are... And the net cost of the municipality is $661,000 if you don't include the $110,000 that goes to the county. So, but if you include it, it's still in the neighborhood of over $500,000. So we are clearly on the short end of that stick, and I think that that's a legitimate piece of discussion, at least in terms of recommendations to the state. Okay. I think that takes care of this evening. We're already over time, so we're not going to get reports on the writing. I would ask, though, that I remind you that we had previously agreed that Gwen was going to write a section of the report involving what the charge is. Jason was going to write about the folks who are on the committee and the biographies and what have you. Joe's putting together the appendix, and my understanding is it's already over 500 pages long, so we've got heft if we don't have anything else, so glad to see that. Liz is doing a section on methodology. Scott is writing some issues on the legal issues, especially the analysis about centralized arraignment, the question of paths to different parts, that type of thing. He's at least taken a stab at that. And I'm just kind of... somebody needs to write about the history of the justice court system.
Already mine.
That's yours?
Yes.
Glenn's doing that. Thank you.
Pretty much got that put together.
May I ask a question, Ray?
Yes, Mark.
Would it be helpful if before the April 13th meeting, this list... by, in very brief form, I don't mean to say it has to all be fleshed out, but naming these N number of items that we've agreed are above the line, be promulgated to every member of the group by email, and that every member be asked to rank them. Would that be helpful?
I know, but to what end?
In order to help organize discussion to see what's in controversy. Our time is limited.
It is, and I think, candidly, I think the biggest issue that needs to be resolved, and anybody here can correct me if they believe otherwise, the biggest issue that needs to be resolved is what I have identified as the topic of discussion at the next meeting. the whole question of do we recommend some kind of a DWI part or a centralized misdemeanor part, or it's still on the table, a district court, or I think the other end of that extreme is, do we rely on the existing system, which is the 170.25?
I withdraw it. Okay.
And I think that's the critical thing. I think we generally are in agreement on many, many of those other issues, those operational issues.
I was planning, after this meeting, like the last meetings, revising my list, and I'm perfectly willing to do that based on what we're tentatively headed toward, so we have at least one place to look for all the items. And I'll knock off the ones that we've knocked off.
That'd be great. That would be extremely helpful, and I appreciate that. Is the 13th a good day? Are people, at least among the six of us, will we all be here on the 13th?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm willing.
Yeah. Okay.
Just to respond to Mark's suggestion, it might be interesting just to put a 1 to 5, with a 5 being the most important. And I mean, maybe everybody rates everything 5, but
I wouldn't.
No? Don't do it. Okay.
All right. No, but at least the meeting after that, I think what's going to happen is, because we're going to go on the 13th, then the next meeting would be probably the 27th. And at that meeting, frankly, we will have made decisions, and we're going to be talking about the kind of language we're going to want to put in any kind of a report. So
should we be marking the 27th in our calendars?
Yes, please.
Because I didn't have it in there already.
Yeah, it hasn't.
I won't be here for that, so just...
Are there others on the 27th, or is that a problem? Why don't we leave it?
I should be here, but...
Leave it for the 27th, let's leave it, because we really do need all the time we can get here.
Yeah, 27th I might miss, because I have to be out in Dryden Town Court.
All right. Let's leave it. Let's see where we go.
Brought into Dryden and wherever I finish there.
Okay. That's the upcoming meeting and meeting assessment. Very quickly, have we added value today?
Good progress, I think. Right. A lot of progress.
Mark?
Yes.
Glenn?
Progress is value. We've added a lot of value.
Okay. Jason,
yes.
You're good. All right, I think so too. I think we're coming to a conclusion, and I can see the end in June.
I have one question, Frank, if I may. The status of the intern with regard to any of this?
You know, I take responsibility for that. I haven't been in touch with him, and candidly, I do not know what the status of his research is at this point. Joe, do you have anything to add to that?
He did a half-page memo on a district court approach that was really just 5 or 6 bullets. So I can circulate that. It didn't shed great light, I didn't think, on the issue, but I'd be happy to share that.
Yeah. So that part of all of this process didn't go so well, you know? All right. All right, folks, thanks a lot, and the meeting is